Welcome into the Seminole Wrap Podcast. The 1st of August, finally, football season is here. The Florida State plays football this month. Isn't that exciting? How about that? We're finally here. Camp week one in the books now. So that's going to be our main focus for today, I think. We're going to talk the weekend that was in recruiting, which was pretty important. It's had a lot of guys on campus and landed a couple of big guys. So we'll go through that. Or I guess one big guy and one transfer for this year. We'll talk through it. And then the first week of camp, we've got Tommy Muir in for John. No John this week. He's taking the week off. We gave him a break. Old guys get a rest for the year start. So we'll turn to Tommy and rotate in since he's been out at camp all week. Give us some observations. And then, of course, Max is here with me as always. I'm Brian Pellerin. Didn't say my own name, but that's okay. Max Escarpio, Brian Pellerin. You know the crew by now. I do want to start our producer, Perry. And he's also the site guy, just got engaged this weekend, which I think is probably the biggest news in Florida State world. She's a Gators, but that's okay. We'll allow it, I guess. She allows him to do this stuff. So congrats to them while we're here. But Tommy, man, thanks for coming on with us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. It's always a blast. Always a blast to get to talk to you guys.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think we're working on some new ways to kind of probably rotate the eyes that are there at practice in pretty often, especially trying to do it more during the season. So hopefully we'll see you around here a little more often if you've got the time to do so. But while you're out there, week one of camp, I assume everything looks great and we won't have a ton to talk about. But I guess, you know, just I'll start with a pretty easy one. Just general observations. What are you seeing out there? How's it going?
Well, the energy of the team is there. And I think that's one of the most exciting parts to see them, like, you know, put on, well, I mean, they're only in top pads. They're only in shoulder pads right now, but the real pads come on Tuesday, but just to see it, to see them come and bring like the energy and the competition and everyone's getting chippy. And, you know, you have guys like Jarrett Verse that come in, they come in through the gates, just screaming, like he's amping everybody up. And I think that's a good sign. It seems like they're all cohesive and it's not bad energy when they go at it. It's just competitive energy. And I think that's one of the major takeaways I've seen aside from the first day. Like the first day, it was kind of like doing the rust, getting off the rust, and then it just went like skyrocketed.
Well, that's good. Yeah. That'd be different than years past, I assume, right?
Yeah. It was different than spring. You know, they look a lot more put together than spring than
that's they were good. In spring. Who you mentioned Verse has been kind of vocal. Who have been kind of the leaders out there?
I mean, you would say Verse, you know, Travis, Helton. I've seen like Tatum Bethune like go around and like kind of like talk to his teammates, you know, give him high fives and stuff like that. He's pretty much out there. Shaheem Brown, you know, he's a young guy, but he's always trying to coach or help coach the younger guys and even the receivers too. And he was doing that in the camps that we had earlier this year. So that's always fun to see. I would say there's more, but those are the ones that first come to mind.
Well, that's good. I think you've got some names in there that are not, that are expected, right? I mean, Jordan Travis is an expected, you would assume, and I'll come back to him in a second, but you know, to see a guy like Verse and you mentioned some of the other younger guys that are being vocal, but I think that speaks to, and John's not here, so I'll say it, the growth of this roster when you're adding the young guys who want to come in and battle and fight and scrap, like that's great. You know, you have the younger guys on the roster being the ones who are willing to fight, you know, and I think that's great. If you can have those guys pushing and driving, you know, you feel good about your experience. And if your younger guys are doing that, that's pretty cool. Especially for a guy like Verse who just transfers in and you know he needs to fill a big role. It feels like he knows it, right? That kind of seems like the vibe he's giving off then.
I was thinking about this on the drive home because we talked to him and he's got this like playful confidence about him. And I really do like that. I mean, who knows if that's going to translate over? It does, you know, on the practice field, but he's got a good vibe about him where he knows he's good and he knows he's going to be good. So that,
I mean, yeah. And it's, I think we were talking about it in the group chat the other day, Max, and I think you were even part of it. You know, it's tough to ask a guy to come in and be Jermaine Johnson, but if he's got the confidence, that obviously helps out, right? Right, Max? Jesus, I just ate my tongue there.
do you think that weight of Jermaine Johnson and Keir Thomas is like on his shoulders, or he doesn't even think about it?
I don't think he even thinks about it. I think he wants to be the best player that he can be at FSU.
Go ahead.
I'm sure that people think about it, but I don't think that's on his mind. Him and like McClendon they're trying to build like their own stamp on FSU, you know, behind Jermaine Johnson and Keir Thomas.
Yeah. And talking about McClendon, I had two breakout players in mind in the spring. And when I saw them, I really wanted to see what they were going to do in the fall camp and see what they were going to do next season, which are Malik McClain and Derek McClendon. What have you seen from them?
McClain, I think, is going to be one of the more reliable receivers. I've seen him bail out the offense on a few different times during camp where they were just, you know, couldn't get anything going. And then all of a sudden it was McClain like high pointing between two defenders and, you know, it was a first down and the offense moved. I think that he's taken another step, and I think he's going to be a pretty good receiver for Florida State this year. McClendon, same as spring, you know, he's fast. He's fast off the line. He's got good hands. You know, he can get to the quarterback. On the edge, I think Byron Turner is starting to emerge as somebody that is going to be impactful in the rotation on the defensive line.
What do you think they did throughout this? Like, because I know a lot of them practiced with each other and they did a couple like team bonding skills, but how important do you think what they did in the summer has translated to what they're doing right now in the fall camp?
I think it made them more cohesive. They definitely added some weight. That was a big note. That was one thing I noticed that first day, was just like the body type changes that happened over the summer. So I think that whatever they were doing, player run workouts, you know, I think it helped, you know, it definitely helped them get their more physical shape, getting looking like Florida State football players.
Well, I wanted to jump back to Jordan Travis. We've talked about it a few times on the podcast, his first, I guess, real year knowing he's the quarterback. How has he, I'm not really worried about how he looks throwing the ball or whatever. Just, I guess, what's his demeanor like? You mentioned him as a leader, but how is he interacting with guys? How is he? Is he a part of even coaching of defenses? Is it offensive focus? Like, how is he when he's out there?
He will go like, even, we'll just use today for an example. I think it was Pittman. It was either Pittman or Douglas, but he ran his route too tight, and Jordan Travis immediately ran over there. And I heard him talking. He was like, "Dude, you can't do that. The safety's going to come over. You gotta do this." And you know, that's what he does. He kind of helps the receivers and all the players really get better. I think this afternoon, Kalen DeLoach tried to rush him because he had sacked him a few plays before, and Jordan Travis just like broke out to the side, and Kalen DeLoach was on the ground. And as he's running to the first down, he's like pointing at Kalen DeLoach, like, "Nope, not this time, not this time."
I think that's something that speaks to, and I really like hearing the same thing about Jared Verse. I should say, you know, that level of confidence that I feel like this team needs, right? It seems like what they need to have. And Max, I loved your question about Malik McClain that led. I felt like I could just feel John's presence return to the Zoom. He's been begging for Malik to pop for the last 2 years. We've been doing this. Oh, anybody else you were wanting to ask about, Max?
I mean, those two have been like, I've really wanted to see what they were going to do. I obviously, the unicorn, the 6'7" receiver, how has he done, Johnny Wilson?
He,
the unicorn, I like it.
He's been up and down. I think his best practice was on Friday. You know, he was catching multiple balls and, you know, just being a really good wide receiver blocking. He has a big body. I think that more time in the system is going to help him out, being that guy that you can, you know, rely on throwing the ball to and him catching it, as aside from just him being a good blocker, which is important. But I think more time getting chemistry with the quarterbacks, it will do him well throughout fall camp.
Yeah, so you're talking about chemistry, and one of those chemistry guys has been Dylan Gibbons throughout his whole entire time that he's been here. Have you seen kind of the offensive line of how they've put people at different positions and maybe if one person's going to be a solid starter there or they don't know yet, like the different depths?
I think they have their depth chart in mind. Gibbons was saying in an interview that he's happy that they have the third string, a solid third string room, or the three deep, so they can rotate, keep rotating people, and they have enough depth now that they're not going to get tired. And I think Julian Armella has definitely stood out today. I know at least because he was opening holes like just for the run game. I saw him a couple times, but you know he's going to be that guy's going to be really good. He's already good, but he's going to be really good, I think.
I think that's what you like to hear, that there are guys. We talked about it a few weeks ago. The trenches are getting rebuilt, and you can hear these young guys coming in and already popping in practice is probably music to everybody's ears. Are there other position battles you're watching, maybe secondary-wise or anywhere else on the field?
Isaiah Thomas, he was pretty much the star of today as far as the defense goes. Everyone had a pretty good practice, but he was kind of like – all over the place. Like he was coming across the field, you know, saving runs. He was intercepting balls. Like he was great in coverage. So I think what resonates throughout is true about him, because other news sites are saying this too, that it was his best day pretty much. So I think that resonates what is actually happening.
Yeah, I talked to them before I talked to John about it, that some of the big steps in the secondary that's going to take next year is if Amarion Cooper is going to be consistent and if he can be a starter, and also the next step that Akeem Dent's going to take, because he talked about it in the spring and he had a good spring ball, so we'll see what he can do. Have they shown anything this throughout the fall camp?
It's hard because I'm talking about all these new guys, but I'm leaving out the older guys because it kind of just like, to me, that's expected that they're good. You know,
yeah.
So, yeah, they're doing great. The reason why these new guys are standing out is because we haven't seen a lot of them. And you know, when they make these big plays, you're like, oh wow, who was that? Instead of, oh, that was Akeem Dent doing his thing. You know. Akeem, he's doing good. Rodney Hill's. Doing pretty good as far as like, you know, a new guy. And Duffy had his best practice today, I think, as far as throwing the ball. He normally just tucks and runs, but I think the game's starting to slow down for him. And, you know, he's making these nice passes.
How's that quarterback room looking? Cause I mean, Tate did okay in the spring. A lot of people said he did good, but is AJ coming back in again?
I don't want to put all my eggs in like one basket for one practice, but if he continues to play like that, I think you've got a solid backup.
Talking about AJ?
AJ Duffy. It's just one practice though that he shined. So I kind of want to wait and see if he can string a few together, you know, and start getting the feel of the game and have it slow down for him, because he can move.
Yeah.
He threw the ball well today.
No, we talked about it in the spring, because I remember I looked at Tommy and I was like, that kid has a rocket for an arm. But he just like whenever he got the ball, he was thinking way too much. And he was like, it wasn't like flowing. The game wasn't flowing. It needs to slow down, and that's going to take time. So we'll see if hopefully Tate can take that backup role right now and he can continue to learn.
Yeah, that's probably the best thing for them. You said it better than me.
Yeah,
Duffy still is a true freshman, but I see the potential. I see why he was rated as a 4-star and why they wanted him.
Well, I think that's all you can really hope for, right? Because, I mean, we've talked about it before. If anything happens to Jordan Travis, this year is, I'd probably say, stick a fork in it, because I don't think you can trust that AJ's going to come in and be a superstar. He could be. But that's not really what you're hoping he has to do this year. You want him to, like Max said, take the time to let everything slow down for him, to where hopefully when if this is his team, maybe next year or the year after, then yes, he's ready to go for it and he's not forced into go. But, you know, just to be able to see the potential and you know, see him start to slow it down is obviously great. You know, I think that's, It's, I mean, and look, and we're kind of putting you in an impossible spot here. I mean, they don't even have full pads on yet. So, you know, I mean, you can't devise the, like, there's some kind of like full games worth of tape out here, but I think it's good. It sounds like the first week of practice is going well. I'm not really sure you could really ask for much more than what you've gotten out of there. You've got a lot of energy and competitiveness. And it seems like, you know, if you're an FSU fan, you got to be happy with how it's going.
Pretty much. Exactly. Yeah. You can't really, it's been a good week. There hasn't been like facepalm moments as years prior have brought, but I think it's going good. I'm excited for them to put the pads on Tuesday because I think the energy at that practice is going to be insane as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to be great because then they can actually really turn up that competitiveness and really start to show, but it's, you know, again, John's not here, so I'll go ahead and steal his line again, but it's, we've talked about the lose a lot, the lose a little year. And the hope is that this is the win a little year. And it seems like they have the confidence that can bounce those one possession games the other way. And that does turn into the win a little year and hopefully maybe eye that bowl game, maybe get above that level. Maybe that's 7-5 or slightly above that. I don't think anyone expects them to go out and compete for, well, I mean, I guess I don't want to get ahead of myself and say compete for the ACC title because we're going to talk about the power rankings that came out the other day that dropped just after we did ours last week. But also on campus this weekend, it was recruiting, right? I mean, they had a lot of guys. Max, I'll actually go to you first because you compiled a pretty long list of everyone that was supposed to be there. I know they ended up landing a commitment that I'm sure guys have got to be pretty excited about in the recruiting world. But I know you were tracking this one all weekend. If you're not following Max on Twitter, please do. Max, plug your Twitter account first because you're active in getting these dudes information, hitting the DMs and getting who's coming into town and stuff. So who came in? How did, you know, what have you heard? And we can get to the commitment in a bit.
Yeah, so I mean, the commitment that they got was obviously CJ Hurd, 2024 DV. So into 2024 class, they already have two safeties, him and Jordan Pride. Jordan Pride was down in Miami this weekend, so that's going to be an iffy one of why he was there. And on Friday, he was in UF, which we don't like to see. So we'll have to see what he's going to do there. I mean, we had a lot of commits there, which I really like. We had Keyshawn Mashburn, Luke Romanoke, Keldrick Falk, and I liked that Lucas Simmons and Roger Kearney were there to really do the camp and like kind of not recruit, but like be with the other players. So it was cool to see that.
Yeah, Kearney and Hurd were both at practice today. I saw a bunch of them. I didn't get all of their names. I know that those two were there.
Yeah, and hopefully Blake Nicholson too, because
I mean, yeah, he was there. Yeah,
he's been there 4 days already. So I mean, there has to be a reason that he obviously has that relationship with Derek. So hopefully something comes of that.
Yeah, we talked about it. You know, I mean, you mentioned it there, CJ Hurd. He's a four-star safety, and you mentioned the 2024 class, but it's, you know, they are, I know it's hard to get excited about a 2024 class, but you know, again, as long as we've been doing this podcast, it's been a whole thing about adding to your blue chip percentage, right? They were well below where they needed to be before. And adding another blue chip guy, I mean, that's great. That's exactly what this team needs to do. And obviously, you know, it's hard to look down the road, you know, what is it? He won't even be on the roster for another 3 years. So, I mean, you're not quite where you want to be like super excited, but it's good to see them recruiting at the level they need, especially, you know, I mean, look, we talked about it all the offseason too, where there was a miss here, a miss there. It was like, oh, they can't land a big fish, but they're in the future. And it's hard to jump in and, as you're rebuilding a program, grab a 2022 kid if your team's only, you know, 2 years into this, you know, a year into trying to get them down.
Yeah, I mean, those 2024 kids, they're far from signing and they're far from getting on campus and putting on the pads and playing for Florida State. Hopefully they can keep them. Hopefully they can keep those commitments. But what I talked about with someone else the other day is that there's a gap between, just like CJ Hurd said, that this was his dream school. There's a gap that I believe that when a team wins a national championship, so when they won in 2013, I was like growing up saying like, oh my gosh, like that's Florida State. That's like a football mecca. Like, and this is like a 2 to 4 year gap where players like Cedric Baxter was saying that's his dream school. Travis Hunter said that's his dream school. And then we missed on them, or they missed on them. So these people that are wanting to go to Florida State and wanting to put on that Garner and gold, it's really important to get those commitments, and they got it with CJ Hurd.
I think it's a good point too, the cyclical nature of it, right? I mean, you know, and it's no secret, I grew up in Louisiana, was an LSU guy. I mean, you know, their pattern was Saban 1-0-3. Then 4 years later, they win again in 2007. 4 years later in 2011, they're in the title game and they lose to Bama. But, you know, 4 years later, they were a couple bounces away. They were, I think I want to say they finished the year like 10-3, but they were a couple bounces away from, again, being that 12-1 or whatever. And then 4 years after that in 2019, they're back again. You know, and it's that, it's kind of what you're talking about. Your success doesn't come immediate. Like if FSU wins that title, like we said, 10 years ago, it pays off. It's not going to pay off 3 years later, 2 years later. It will. I mean, obviously it does, but you still reap benefits down the road. And then, like you said, I think they're still gaining from that now. And as they rebuild this program, which there are signs of it, and we talked last week or 2 weeks ago about how Atkins has done such a good job reconnecting this program with a lot of the younger guys, you're seeing that pay off again. You're seeing the FSU brand resonate with this group because they remember being young and seeing them hoist the championship.
Yeah, and just like I said, that's a small group. So it was cool to see that CJ Hurd was still, that's still just dream school, because he visited, I know he was talking with Oregon, he was talking with Florida, he was talking with a bunch of other schools. So, and like players like Brandon Innes and other receivers, they've said that that's their dream school, and then they go elsewhere. So it's really important, just like this season, it's going to be really important for them to win, because that gap, if it's not closed already, it's closing. Yeah. To where other kids, maybe 4 years from now, they're not going to think of Florida State when they think of the top schools, and they're not going to think of them when they're going to commit or they're five-star and they want to look around.
Well, and if we're going to talk about CJ Hurd, I feel like we got to talk about that video, right? The commitment video. I'm sure, Tommy, you saw that, huh?
Yeah, that was great. I also like the picture of him and Dalvin Cook when he was like 10 or something like that. Did you see that?
No, I hadn't seen. I missed that one. I was just watching his video again just to make sure I had it right.
Yeah, he has a bunch of like not baby pictures, but like him when he was a little kid, just like around the team and like that's how Julian Aramella was too. Julian Aramella has like a bunch of him going to Doak or him like in the locker room, and super cool to see.
Yeah, that's cool to see them come back around and pay off. In case you didn't see the video, maybe you're not on Twitter, you're not on Instagram. I'm trying to figure out how to even describe it as the music plays incredibly loud in my ears as I'm trying to talk. So I apologize if I was screaming. It starts with like this fire build of the Florida Gator logo. And then it just like drops to black, and then it fills out with the FSU logo. I mean, he added FSU football in the video, in the tweet itself. So I feel like he kind of knew that it was going to turn, but it's a good little troll. It's the hat on the table, put it on your head, then toss it away in Twitter video world, I guess.
Digital world. Yeah,
it's turned virtual.
Yeah, the virtual version of tossing it away. The other guy that I wanted to mention was, they just landed this one. I think it was today. So this is Sunday, we're recording this. Was the grad transfer, Malik Feaster from Jacksonville State. I saw the joke already floating around. At least he knows how to win in Tallahassee. You know, John says we don't talk about that game, but I, you know, he's not here to stop me. So adding a little DB depth, I don't really know if there's really anything we can add to it. I mean, 6 foot, 187 cornerback. He's a grad transfer, so he's got a lot of experience. You know, I don't expect there's going to be some kind of crazy impact from a guy who just drops in on July 31st, but you know, it's extra depth, right? Maybe in some experience as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of those injury pieces where they're just making sure that guy is going to be ready. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Tommy, any thoughts on him?
Honestly, I need to look at, I need to watch some of his film, but like what David was saying, like they wanted somebody, or he thinks they wanted somebody with experience and that could immediately, you know, do something for the team that they don't have to train or you know, develop like that. They just wanted that depth piece.
Yeah. And, you know, if he's out there, and I think you're looking around, and I'm sure it's one of those situations where you're looking at your own roster and you're probably like, yeah, we're probably an injury away from a problem here. You know, you grab a kid who can be experienced and not cause a real problem. And I think I wouldn't read more into this than that.
It's just always good to have depth pieces in those rooms, just like the offensive line, the linebacker rooms have. Like, you have Jamie Robinson in that room, but other than that, like Shine Brown, Amari Cooper, they're all pretty young. So it's cool to have a veteran leadership there.
Yeah, a guy with a lot of starting experience, a guy who's obviously, like we said, a grad transfer. So he's not exactly new to the game. So, yeah, I mean, just rattle off some stats. He's got 38 games over 4 years. He's got 120 tackles and, you know, 3 picks, 18 pass breakups, 2 fumble recoveries. I mean, nothing that's like, whoa, this guy's going to jump into the first round. But I mean, you know, I mean, he's a good football player. And that's all you can really ask for as a depth piece. Max, I cut you off there. Anything?
I said one of the fun facts that he's only given up 4 touchdowns. So,
oh, there you go. Revis Island, basically. Never mind. It's Feaster Island. Good luck. Don't throw to his side of the field. That's it. If you're one of these ACC quarterbacks I'm about to bring up, don't even go towards him. It's over. Well, speaking of, we did this last week on the pod, and I came up with the idea because I kind of expected this media poll to drop, and it didn't until right after, which worked out great. Honestly, the comments, I ended up arguing with many of you guys anyway about conference realignment again, but you know, we weren't talking that, but regardless, the ACC media poll dropped, preseason poll. Your champion, your top picked champion is Clemson, 103 votes out of the, 160 or so? I think it's 165 or whatever, 103 votes. I mean, they're picked to be the champ. NC State next, 38. Miami next with 8. Wake 4, Pitt 3, Virginia 3. Those are my Cavs. Woo! The Seminoles. Well, I mean, well, you missed it last week, but I was in here talking about how much I love Brennan Armstrong and the guys. Florida State 2, North Carolina got 2, and Boston College pulled 1 vote for the championship. I don't know what these people were doing. Honestly, it feels kind of off the rails once Florida State got their 2 votes. I think you guys probably agree with that. They're also picked, I believe, 5th. I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th in the Atlantic behind Clemson, NC State, Wake, and Louisville. I think that's kind of where we had them last week, roughly. Max, do you have any issues with kind of how this list fell out?
I don't hate the Atlantic list at all. I think I have Florida State over Louisville. I mean, that's just like, I think the NC State and Clemson are in Wake Forest, but I have Florida State over Louisville.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what we talked about last week was where we felt, I mean, Louisville's point difference isn't much. It's about 80 points, whereas Clemson is more than double the points of FSU. So, you know, and again, those points come by like where you voted them. So you get more points for being first, but it's one of those things where it looks pretty clear that the voters think the class of the Atlantic is Clemson and NC State. It looks like they think Wake is kind of in that third tier by itself. And then I would say Louisville, Florida State, and Boston College are kind of in a cluster. We kind of talked about Boston College last week, maybe being that borderline of slightly worse to maybe about the same. And Louisville was that like basically about the same. They're kind of the same team. And then Syracuse obviously being much worse. Tommy, anything you think there kind of jumps out to you?
I think it's pretty accurate. I'm going to go with Max. I think that FSU should be ranked a little bit higher than Louisville, but you know, it seems right. You know, where our program or where FSU is.
Yeah. But I don't think it's anything you can take. Like, I mean, I understand the slide in it. You're picked 5th out of 7 and like overall in the conference that probably puts you like what 10th out of 14 or whatever, but I don't.
It's realistic.
I think that's where you, yeah, it's realistic. Right. And I think that's where you are. And you know, again, this isn't a poll of FSU fans. You know, it's a poll of ACC media, and this is where this is what you look like. But as we talked about last week, I think you got to realize you have Jordan Travis and a solid defense, and that gives you a puncher's chance in every game, which I don't think you can ask for more than that.
Yeah, I actually kind of like it because I don't have all these expectations because I don't think that a bunch of people, maybe analysts, maybe reporters, have been throwing a bunch of expectations on them, which I like. So they don't have that weight on their shoulders. So they can show whatever they can do and they don't have that like looking back at it.
Yeah, they don't feel like that daunting pressure over them. I think that's good. I think, you know, and kind of Tommy, what you were talking about, that they have that confidence already. I don't think they need it. And it seems like a confident group would be more than happy to wear a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, to quickly jump to the Coastal, and I don't want to make it too long, but the same group here, they kind of tier it. Miami is number one at over 1,000. Pitt kind of close number two. They're putting them kind of together. I think what we talked about last week was obviously last year Pitt was better than Miami, but we're kind of thinking Miami takes a step up, Pitt takes a step down. That kind of is the shuffle there, which isn't really surprising. North Carolina, I'd also say, is kind of in this cluster. They're only about 100 points behind Pitt, so maybe 200 points totally separating Miami through UNC. I think North Carolina may be a little overrated there, but I don't hate it. I think third in their division is fine. Then the next grouping is Virginia and Virginia Tech, almost neck and neck at 600 points apiece. I think Virginia is much better than Virginia Tech, but again, I'm way high on Virginia than anyone else probably is. And then Georgia Tech and Duke are pretty solidly the bottom in this side, but Georgia Tech got a vote to win the conference, so I don't know how that happened, but they did. I don't have any issues with this side either. I think it makes sense. Miami, where they are, I personally, like I said, like Virginia more than most, but.
You have Virginia over UNC?
I do. Yeah, I think so. I trust the offense more. I think it's just, I've just grown to like Brendan Armstrong. I mean, if he gets hurt again, then forget it. I mean, I think he only missed one game last year, but I think it's the same way for any college football team at this point. Your quarterback gets hurt, forget about it. But yeah, I like Virginia. I don't know if I would say they're definitely better like we did last week, but I think they're better than Virginia Tech, and I don't know why they're so close in the rank. Again, it's a poll, and it just ends up where you end up. So, you know, if more people think they're fourth, then they just end up fourth. But yeah, I mean, I think Miami more than likely seems to be the team to expect to come out of this side, but I don't think there's anyone that's like, yeah, it's definitely Miami, you know, because they have to take the step forward.
It'll be interesting to see like postseason where these teams fall, you know, like in the rankings to see how accurate the prediction.
Yeah, I think a difference in the Atlantic and the Coastal is that like you see that competition in the quarterback position in the Atlantic, and then in the Coastal, it's, I mean, in my opinion, it's Tyler Van Dyke, and then there's a drop off.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you've got Tyler Van Dyke again. I like Brendan Armstrong, but I don't think he's anywhere even close to Tyler Van Dyke. I think when you look at the Coastal, it's between Pitt and North Carolina, whose quarterback actually is going to be able to fill the shoes they've got to fill. And, you know, I don't see that as much on that side anywhere else. You know, there's no one else in over there that makes me like, yeah, it's, you're picking it. Like we talked about last week, you're basically picking these teams off the quarterback and your confidence in that. And that's where I think TVD comes in. And then like, yeah, perfect on the Atlantic. I mean, I think you've got confidence in most of these guys. I mean, I look it up down the list, even from Boston College up, I feel like I know who the quarterback is for all these schools. And that makes a difference. I guess if you're Miami, you got to look at what's in front of you and feel good about it. I don't think if you're Florida State, you're exactly all that excited about Cristobal possibly having a clean path toward a ACC title game in his first year, but that's just how it breaks for you. I don't know what to tell you. Hopefully Van Dyke isn't that good. I guess that's your hope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or turns an ankle, or maybe Cristobal just makes him mad and he decides to transfer. No turning an ankle. We don't wish that on anyone. Yeah, but I think that pretty much covered. What's that?
He spikes the ball with 3 seconds left every game.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Tyler Van Spike.
TBS. Little TBS. But I think that pretty much covers it for this week, man. Tommy, I appreciate you jumping on to kind of give us that in-person perspective and rotate again for John here. Like I said, I think we've been talking about adding some extra content for once season starts. And I think if we can, you know, a quick week check in on how practice is going, how things, obviously we'll get Max back up there so he can go back to school since he's the young kid around here. You know, get him back in the classroom and let him learn something or whatever. I don't know. I'm trying to be an old guy around here. I'm not even 30. But yeah, I think it'll be fun. And I definitely want to rotate you back yet. So we appreciate the insight and the, what's going on out there. Of course, go ahead and plug your tweeting, right? You're a Twitter guy. Go ahead and plug your accounts. That way people know where to follow your insights during the week.
I kind of Twitter. But it's seven Toms, T-O-M-M-S.
T-O-M-M-S, seven T-O-M-M-S, seven Toms. Tommy, I appreciate it, man. Max, of course, as always. TBD on what we're doing next week. I'm still trying to work on a couple of interviews I think could be interesting, looking more specifically maybe at these quarterbacks. I think Max is reaching out. Seems like we're going to try and find some ways to make this the rest of this preseason fun, interesting, and then the check-ins at camp in case anything pops up. We'll be keeping an eye on it, of course. But appreciate you guys listening. The audience is, you know, we see the metrics. It's growing. You guys are supporting us, and we appreciate it. If you like it, obviously follow, subscribe, give us a rate, review, tell your friends. you know, it's growing. We're having a good time and we're having fun. It helps us keep doing this, and I appreciate it. So for Brian, Tommy, Max, thanks guys. That's a wrap.